This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all of us joining us live at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon, getting you ready for the Jets and the Toronto Maple Leafs later on this evening at MTS Center. We're back from our holiday hiatus, so it's been a couple weeks since we've been with you. First and foremost, a Happy New Year to everybody listening this afternoon. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Joining us on the program this afternoon in about 30 minutes' time to talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs, Jonas Siegel, TSN 1050 Leafs reporter, is going to join us. In the second hour, Sunaya Sapurji from Yahoo Sports. She covers junior hockey for Yahoo Sports. She's going to join us to talk about the World Junior Hockey Championships. And then in the final hour of the show, to discuss the New Jersey Devils and their unique coaching situation, Tom Giulitti from the Record newspaper in New Jersey is going to join us. Without further ado, I do say good afternoon to both of my colleagues. Ezra, Richard, gentlemen, Happy New Year to you both. Good to see you. Welcome back to the program.
Yeah, Happy New Year. It's been
2 weeks.
2 weeks, yeah. It's good to be back here at Boston Pizza. It's filling up a little bit here. There's not too many people here, but as the show goes on and they know that Richard's here, they'll start to fill up.
That's usually, yeah, Mr. Celebrity himself, Richard Pollock, fresh off of his stint doing color commentary alongside Paul Edmonds for a couple games in the past week or so. Richard, good afternoon. Welcome to the program as well.
And you guys have been teaming up on me. I got Ezzy and Drew. Drew and Dave, really, Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, have been the hardest on me. And then I heard Michael Remus tweeted out that the Jets are 0-2-0 when I'm doing
the
color. Yeah.
That's right. They're winless when you've been doing the color.
I know it was a very exciting opportunity, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Working with Paul was a pleasure.
Well, let's get right into it in our discussion of the Winnipeg Jets. Of course, the Jets, you know, 2-2-1 since we were last on air on December 20th. So that's five games. They've really split them about as evenly as you can in this day and age in the NHL, winning those two big road games, one right before Christmas, one right after Christmas, in Chicago and in Minnesota, coming home, losing again on the back-to-back to the Wild, losing on New Year's Eve to the New York Islanders, also tying the Philadelphia Flyers, going way back to the first game on December 21st, that game that they had in hand and then ended up losing in overtime. So 2-2-1 for the Jets in the last five games. They're tied with San Jose and Calgary for the two wild card spots. They're 2 points behind the St. Louis Blues for third in the division. But when you really look at it, the field behind the Jets and the Sharks and the Flames is also sort of beginning to creep up. Mm-hmm. The Dallas Stars playing some very good hockey as of late. 7-1 since the Jets beat Dallas on December 9th. Minnesota's still struggling, but we expect them to turn it around. And Colorado last night beating Edmonton, and they're sort of beginning to play their way back into the conversation in the NHL's Western Conference and in the wild card race.
You know, Drew, if you look at, as a whole, the five games, 2-2-1, I mean, you're saying, okay, we played pretty tough competition, right? We played against the Minnesota Wild a couple of times. We played against the Islanders, obviously the Blackhawks. If you look at it game by game and you're the Jets, you're probably looking at blown opportunities. You're looking at the Philly game when you had the lead. You're looking at the Minnesota game when you're up 2-0 and you kind of get beat by their third, fourth line there against the Wild. Obviously, you have victories against Minnesota and Chicago. And in the Islanders game, you really did you have a chance to get in it? Yeah, you pushed a little bit in the second period, but you were down 2-1. You never really were in that game. You never really had control of that game. So if you look at it game by game, you're as a Jets member of the Jets organization, you're thinking, I'd love to have been at least 3-2 there, or, you know, 4-1 kind of thing. We had our opportunities and we didn't take advantage of them. What I think is happening here now, though, is these injuries are having an effect. And they're having an effect on the back end. That's obviously where the four main injuries are, Stewart and Trouba and Enstrom and Bogosian. But they're also having an effect at forward, too. And there's more depth in this team at defense than there is at forward. And the Evander Kane injury, while he certainly has flaws in his game, has brought to light the depth issue on the back end, up front, excuse me. And what I mean by that is Chris Thorburn being elevated to that third line, as he, no offense to Chris Thorburn, he's your great locker room guy, energy, but he's not a third line winger. Never mind that, guys, he's not a third line left winger. He's not even a left winger. So that's the problem, and I think, you know, Jay Harrison addition I like, you know, character guy, depth, didn't cost you much. But I think at some point, and I think in the relatively near future, Kevin Cheveldayoff has to go out, and this is not, I don't want, if I'm a Jets fan, I don't want him trading any kind of valuable draft picks, any kind of valuable prospects. But a Derek Roy type of player, when it's just money, you need to get somebody up here in Winnipeg who can play top nine. You might not love what he brings, but he's better than what they have right now to be able to improve the depth and give that third line a little bit of an offensive flair, a little bit of an opportunity to create something. Because when you watch the third line in the past couple of games now, guys, the cycle shifts are where they're making their hay, but they're not creating a ton of opportunities.
Right, and the depth issue doesn't really become apparent in Chicago when you're beating them 5-1, or even in the Minnesota game when you beat them. And
but that Chicago game, as I sorry to interrupt, was they still had Kane in the lineup in that Chicago game, the one where they went into Chicago and won that game. So that's still, you know, you still have a quality third line at that point in time.
Yeah, and you know, at this point, you know, you have to really look, and that's why Coach Paul Maurice is putting TJ Gagliardi on the third line to try to get some offense going on that third line. Chris Thorburn obviously had a game that, you know, he'd like back, especially even though he had a good scoring chance against the Islanders in the first period there. He had a costly turnover that led to the goal. If you remember, Franz Nielsen and Ryan Strome had a give-and-go play on an odd-man rush, and that's why you're going to see TJ Gagliardi go up to the third line. But really, you know, you have a situation here where some of the problems over the last 3 weeks, even with Kane in the lineup, because, you know, you're right, Drew, Kane was in the lineup, but he hasn't been exactly tearing it up this year. He's been playing better as of late, but because you had two scoring lines going, Ladd, Little, Wheeler, and then obviously the Perreault, Scheifele, and Frolik line going, you kind of didn't need as much scoring from the third and fourth lines. And the Jets, unfortunately, haven't got that much scoring from the fourth lines. But the Jets need to be better defensively tonight, and they need goals from other lines. I mean, Ladd, Little, Wheeler, those guys really, with the exception of maybe a week or two here throughout the entire season, have really been pretty consistent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have a situation where, you know, ideally, you know, Richie mentions Chris Thorburn is actually a natural right winger. And, yes, he should be at that position, whether he's on the third or fourth line. But the Winnipeg Jets are playing a Toronto Maple Leafs team. As we know, it's the top offensive team in the league. It's kind of tough to believe sometimes because it's such a top-heavy team with the Kessel, Bozak, Van Riemsdyk line. But they've got other guys that can score. Obviously, three of those guys are injured. Yeah. And we'll get to that later. Mm-hmm. But, no, the Jets have a few weaknesses that have been exposed in the last two games. And I think, you know, Richie mentioned J.A. Harrison. I think he's done a great job. And I think since some of the defensemen have gone out, I think Ben Chiarot's done a great job. I think Paul Postman, Adam Partey have had some big problems. Adam Partey especially. Don't want to pick on Adam Partey, but he had a really tough game against the Islanders. He was on on the ice for, I think, three goals. He was definitely on the ice for the first two goals there. You know, the one, especially the first one when he whacked it up, that was, you know, that was a terrible bounce.
But there was a bad turnover earlier in that shift by Postman as well on the reverse, right? So.
And that pairing has had some problems. And right now the Jets, with the exception of, you know, putting in Julien Brouillette, who's got 10 games of NHL experience, this is the group that they're going to have to rely on until guys like Zach Bogosian and Tobias Enstrom come back. So, you know, there's some holes on this team that good goaltending and good primary scoring have maybe covered up, Drew. And in the last two games, it hasn't. I mean, the Islanders game, and, you know, I think Richie, you know, was bang on here. The Islanders came in here and dominated the Jets.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really good team. That's one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. And this is what we've seen this year. The Jets are a good team this year. I think there's a very good chance the Jets can still make the playoffs. They're in a great position right now. But they've looked significantly weaker against good teams. So you're talking about the Anaheim Ducks. You're talking about the Islanders. You're talking about the St. Louis Blues. Sure, they beat the Blackhawks twice. I'm not saying that the Jets can't beat good teams, but I think those weaknesses get really exposed against some of the better teams in the league.
And the problem is that you have the lack of depth on offense puts more pressure on your defense.
Sure.
And these two, they're not mutually exclusive in terms of the needs here. You need to be able to create and sustain offensive pressure to take some defensive pressure off the defense shift after shift. Everybody in this lineup, in the Jets lineup, is being elevated to a role they're fairly unfamiliar with. And while Dustin Byfuglien may be familiar with playing against the other team's best players, Ben Chiarot certainly isn't. None of the other five guys are. And Dustin Byfuglien hasn't played against other teams' best players in some time. It's a big adjustment. Everything's a big adjustment. So, to me, you need to go out and bring in, again, doesn't need to be something huge, but it needs to be something. Even a waiver claim, I think, is probably be able to create more offense right now than they have. And I think that's one thing. Now, the other thing is the defensive pressure that they're going to feel, and by that I mean, as he mentions, Party and Postma. Well, Party and Postma have felt a lot of, you know, have not played their best. And Adam Party's your veteran guy, and you kind of know what you're going to get for the most part. Paul Postma is a very talented player, but is lacking confidence right now. I don't think there's any doubt about the fact that Paul Postma is just lacking a little bit of confidence. And being put against the other team's, you know, pretty solid lines, whether Klitsam and, you know, and Harrison are bearing that burden, or maybe Party and Postma, against a team like the Islanders, it doesn't matter, because the third line is Ryan Strome, Franz Nielsen, and Anders Lee. That's a great third line. So when you play against now, Leafs are less of an issue in that regard.
Leafs are being a very top-heavy team.
And the San Jose Sharks don't have the depth they once did. But you look, and if they do spread it out with some of their centers around the roster, then you're really putting them up in pressure situations again. So you need to find ways to help them out. And the forwards are trying to do their best in terms of back-checking, in terms of playing a defensive style, but at the expense of offense. Like, what I'm trying to say is the injuries are starting to creep up, and the play that they were, the success they had before was impressive, but may very well be unsustainable.
Well, what I noticed, especially in the Islanders game on New Year's Eve. I mean, I had been away, so I missed both. I missed the home game against the Wild. I watched it, of course. But against the Isles, it looked like that they were tired. And not tired because they played too many games in, you know, 7 games in 11 nights or whatever that is. Because every NHL team, when you can find those stretches where they play, you know, 4-6 or 3-4, whatever. They just looked like they didn't, like, the weight of having to play with such limited depth and have guys out of the roles they're comfortable in look like it caught up with them, especially in that New York Islander game, to me.
Well, I don't disagree with that, and I think the concern I would have as a Jets fan would be, how does that factor on an ongoing basis? Because you're only going to play more games. The games are going to get more intense. The good teams are going to pump it up when they want to get positioning for the playoffs, and the other teams are competing with you for those playoff spots. And the fourth line hasn't played much, is he right? And is the fourth line going to play anymore?
Well, to that point, I was listening to Rick yesterday on the roundtable, and he had a very interesting point where he went through pretty much the entire league, and he looked at the guys and their average time on ice per game, and I think he said minimum of 10 games. And I think he said, I don't want to quote him exactly because I don't know what the exact numbers were, but Anthony Peluso plays maybe the third fewest minutes of any NHL player that's played 10 games this year. On a nightly basis, and I think Chris Thorburn was also in the bottom 15 or the bottom 20 as well.
That's not surprising at all. I already knew that. I mean,
of course, but it catches up to the team when it's one thing to roll three lines, but now you're rolling two lines plus Adam Lowry, and Adam Lowry's a rookie.
Well, it's been like that the entire year. It's been like
Lowry's been good.
Yeah. It's been like that since dating back to last year, and I'm not saying Rick didn't bring up a good point. I'm just saying that, you know, that's the way it's been. And even going back to Claude Noel, that's the way it's been. And
I can't believe you would criticize Rick on this show, Ezra.
and you know, you mentioned ice time. Something interesting to look at from yesterday. You look at the top line of the Leafs. Some of those guys were playing 24 or 25 minutes last night versus the Minnesota Wild. And, you know, you talk about top heavy. There are less top heavy guys without Nazem Kadri, Peter Holland, and Joffrey Lupul in this lineup. I mean, this team has other guys that can score goals. Mike Santarelli's had a nice year. David Clarkson has had a pretty good year as compared to last year, which was a year that was really regrettable.
You had a better year in the NHL last year than David Clarkson did, though.
But as to the point about the playing the ice time, the Jets' first line actually plays more per game than the Leafs' first line does.
Right, which was what, you know, the point, you know, I was trying to make is that they were playing more last night because of all the injuries.
Right.
It's a tough situation that the Jets find themselves in right now, given the lack of depth. And later on in the show, I want to talk about, you mentioned, both, you know, maybe it's time to go either get a waiver claim or give up not a big asset, but a smaller asset to see what you can go do. The Jay Harrison trade where it costs you the equivalent of pretty much nothing.
You could have got Derek Roy for nothing.
That's right. I mean, you could have got Derek Roy for nothing.
Love Derek Roy. Derek Roy does not skate as well as he once did. He is a smaller player. There's a lot of drawbacks now on Derek Roy, but he's got a certain skill level that the team doesn't have on those depth lines. And if you are more comfortable with Adam Lowry at center, then you throw Derek Roy onto the left wing. You may not love him on the left wing. You may not love his defensive, whatever it may be. he still provides an offensive upgrade in some form that you didn't have before and only costs you money.
We'll talk about that later on in the show. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at tonight's opponent, the Toronto Maple Leafs. They arrived into town late last night, having played in Minnesota earlier in the day. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. We're live at Boston Pizza City Place. Come on down. If you see a Leafs fan here, you can heckle them. It's a new rule they have at Boston Pizza City Place. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting. Custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
You know, you missed a pretty good pickup hockey game on Tuesday. We had a couple of TSN 1290 celebrities on the ice.
Not including us?
Well, we were on the ice. Okay. You, unfortunately, had that back problem.
I was on the IR. I had a brief stint on the IR, but I'm glad to say I am back. And you see, the problem is I'm now back. You see, hockey's way too intense for me. I was back curling last night, so that's much more at my speed. You know, something like along those lines.
We missed you out there, though. We had Westy out there. We had Rick Ralph in net. Rick Ralph made a save that was reminiscent of, you know, the best Marty Brodeur glove saves back in the day. He was pretty good. There was some trash
talk.
That
was on me.
And that was on Richie, that's right. Yeah. And I think I passed you the puck on that one.
You did, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Rich and I looked a little bit like Gretzky and Curry out there.
Oh, God. with pianos on our backs.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Bob McKenzie said.
Anyways, let's talk about tonight's opponent for the Winnipeg Jets at MTS Center. The Toronto Maple Leafs make their only visit to town, and it's always a fun game when the Leafs are in Winnipeg.
Is it?
It is. It always is a fun game. First of all, I mean, the game, I think it was last year. Was that the 5-4 overtime win for the Jets?
I believe they won 5-3 last? Yeah, well, I think you might have been right, Drew.
No, the Jets had that big lead, and then the Leafs came all the way back and tied it on that late goal, sort of a bad goal from a bad angle. Jets ended up pulling it off in overtime.
You're right, yeah.
Somebody will tweet us if it's right or wrong in about 5 seconds.
They went 2-0 against the Jets. Went 2-0 against the Leafs last year.
That's right, they did. Then they went to Toronto afterwards, and they beat the Leafs again.
4-2, I think.
Something like that. That was sort of later on in the year after they'd fallen out of the... Yes. Both teams were out of the playoff race at that point in time. But always a fun time when the Leafs come to town. And the Leafs are, I mean, they're sort of the same Leafs we've seen for the last couple of years in that they can't defend, you know, towards the bottom of the league in defense. But when it comes to scoring goals, they're the tops in the NHL. So, you know, ultimately that's, you know, saying you're scoring better than anybody else in the league is a pretty good thing to say about a team.
And, Richie, it's not just the goals for and the goals against, Drew, which is a massive problem. It really is. I mean, this team is not having any trouble scoring goals. I watched a good part of that game last night between the Leafs and the Wild, and towards the end of the game, you also saw a little bit of undisciplined Leafs. Phil Kessel actually at one point went to two refs on the ice and another linesman because they missed a slashing call on Phil Kessel, and then he got a penalty for it. But the Leafs, it's the same old Richie. They, you know, and again, I know you don't want to give too much credit to the fancy stats guys, because as you guys know, I'm a little anti-fancy stats, or a little bit hesitant to, you know, rely too much on those advanced stats, but it's possession again. And this team, Richie, is a team that has tons of speed and will cause the Jets a lot of problems, especially without guys like Jacob Trouba, Tobias Enstrom on the ice, even Zach Bogosian.
For sure.
This is a team that doesn't spend enough time in the offensive zone. It's a team that relies a lot on that top line and other guys on this team to score off of the rush.
But
and it's not, and it's not a very good defensive team as far as the forwards go as well.
That's true. But, I mean, let me ask you, Ezzy, if your team is scoring more than any team in the National Hockey League, or do you want to give up that scoring for possession? I think that's the catch, right? Like, if this team succeeds off the rush and creating opportunities with speed, they're likely not going to flourish in a cycle down low game. And not that Corsi necessarily always reflects that in any event. I mean, there's some flaws in that aspect of it. But I just think that, like, if your problem is not scoring here, so how do you play defense and not give up all that offense? And obviously that's what Rodney Carlisle is trying to figure out. And every time he thinks he's there, they put out a poor performance. But, you know, I mean, If you're looking in their Corsi statistics, I know we're near the bottom of the league, about 28th, I believe. In
28th in Corsi and in Fenwick.
And yes. That hasn't changed, Richie, since last year.
Right, but they're still, they're also leading the league in goal scorer.
Yeah.
And so will that dry up a bit? Maybe, but I don't think it's drying up to 28th.
And they've
got, I don't know what the stat indicates necessarily, but the idea is, if you're succeeding in scoring, like they've bucked that a little bit in terms of consistently, that they're clearly kind of they are a rush squad, a team that beats you with speed.
Yep.
Now you're going to see a team that comes into town tonight that doesn't have the depth that they did a week ago. I mean, obviously now you have the Lupul injury and you have the Kadri injury. You know, Van Riemsdyk breaks his nose last night, but we think he's going to play.
He was back on the ice at the end of the game.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, you have the injury. So you look at their second line. I mean, their second line is not a very good second line. So if you look at it that way, guys, well, the Jets should match up okay here. You're basically talking Brian Little line against Tyler Bozak line. Play about 19 minutes a game, all six of those guys do. They're going to match up against each other. You're going to draw them up against the Leafs' top pairing, and the Bufflin-Sherratt pairing is going to draw the Leafs' top line. And then the reality, the Jets' second line is better, in my opinion, than the Leafs' second line with all these injuries.
The Leafs' second line expected to be some variation of David Booth, Daniel Winnick, and Carter Ashton. Maybe you see Leo Klamarov in there. Maybe Clarkson comes in there.
Klamarov, and Winnick, whatever it may be. I mean,
yeah, it's a mixed right now with Randy Carlyle after last night's, right. After the injuries. And second half of a back-to-back, the Leafs are a mixed bag. We're not sure what their lines are going to look like.
So the Scheifele line is so key tonight.
Sure. Yep.
Because Scheifele, Frolik, and Perreault, and Perreault's just been dynamite lately, that line can be the key to victory. Because if the Jets' top line can match up against the Leafs' top line, and then the Jets' edge is in that second line. The Leafs' depth is not there right now.
And that
now, the Leafs' defense on paper is better than obviously the Jets' defense, and that's basically every team the Jets are going to play Ezzie until they're healthy. But
and if you watch the Leafs this year, I like that Clarkson, Winnick, Komarov line. Komarov's been injured for a little bit here on the Leafs, but that's the type of line, Richie,
that you can
play the cycle game, and
you're right.
All three of those guys can bruise you up, and it's an effective line. But the only problem is I'm taking the Scheifele line against that line as far as their ability to control most of the play. The problem I think the Jets are going to run into, again, if the Jets play the way that we've seen them play for the majority of this season, good chunks of this season at least, the Jets, I think, are a better team than the Leafs. I think when you run into trouble, if you're the Jets, is if you start to play that kind of back and forth game, or you
totally
cause some turnovers.
Totally.
Because as I mentioned before, Kessel, Bozak, and Van Riemsdyk, that's a top five line, even if you want to say that, in the NHL. It really is, not just points wise, but their ability to really control the play, not down low, but really score chances. This is a team that takes a lot of shots on net, and they have a lot of guys that can hurt you. But it's a situation for the Jets that they don't want to. If they play, let's say, similar to the way they've played the last two games, which hasn't been very good, especially the Islanders game. As Richie mentioned, the Leafs have a lot of the same type of dangerous weapons that the Islanders have. Obviously, injuries have played a bit
less depth, though.
Less depth. Yeah. Even with the guys that are out in the lineup, they have less depth. But
well, it's funny. If you look back to that Isles game, it wasn't the Okposo and Tavares line that killed the Jets.
Right.
It was, like you said, their second and third line.
Especially the third line, Anders Lee,
Ryan Strome, and Franz Nielsen. The Leafs don't have that kind of third line. They probably don't even have that kind of second line without Kadri, without Peter Holland.
Right.
I mean, Komarov's back in the lineup. This will be his third game back since he missed, since he was out of the lineup on November 29th.
Great checking forward. He's not going to be your scorer.
No.
The Jets need to be able to play better in the neutral zone, guys, though, and that's the problem that they had against the Islanders. The speed of the Islanders is causing a lot of problems in two different ways. The first way was on the breakout. The Jets were playing into the Islanders' hands, and now the Islanders were playing soft. One guy was angling them to one side, and then as soon as a pass was made in the neutral zone, boom, three Islanders converge on you with speed, and you turn the puck over. Okay? The Jets forced a few passes, caused a few icings that they didn't want to do. The other issue is the Jets' defense in the neutral zone forecheck was making, I think, slow decisions or poor decisions, and they weren't getting to where they needed to be in time. The Jets, to me,
is that a function? Sorry for interrupting.
It is a little bit of the injuries because they're not as quick.
I wasn't even going to say injuries. The function of being concerned about the speed that they were facing up against.
Sure, good point. That's a factor for sure. But the Jets' style of play is more difficult to. It's more difficult to affect the style of play that they have, what they want to, when they have the injuries and the lack of foot speed on the back end that they have. Now, some of these guys can still skate, but, I mean, Jacob Trouba, you're talking world-class skaters here, right?
Yeah.
Zach Bogosian, these are world-class skaters. They can, and Enstrom, they can close that gap so quick. So the Jets need to be more assertive in their decisions in the neutral zone. If the defense is going to pinch up, and take the weak side away. Then the forwards need to help. The defense need to make that decision and be assertive with that decision. Not hesitate. You hesitate. I mean, you saw a couple of times, guys, hesitating, falling down, getting beat wide. Can't do that. You have to be forceful. And that's one thing I'm going to watch for the Jets tonight, to see if they can actually succeed against a team that is good in transition and creates their offense off the rush.
And guys, this might be Captain Obvious. Just quickly, Drew, this might be Captain Obvious. You got to take less penalties. The Jets gave the Islanders seven power plays. The Leafs might not have the best power play in the league. It's okay. It's kind of middle of the pack last time I checked.
That's right. I think it was about 10th or 12th, I think, when I checked yesterday.
You don't want to take that many penalties, especially those late third period penalties. You know, Buff got into trouble, you know, not to pick on him, but, you know, the Jets got to be smarter than that. They got to play well against the Leafs because they're also a team that likes to bring their defense into the play. Cody Franz and Jake Gardner, they've got some defense.
Morgan Riley.
Morgan Riley, they can jump up into the play. So this Leafs team might have a bunch of injuries, but, you know, they're still a pretty good team.
Let's go to break. When we come back, I want to talk about the Jets forward group against the Leafs defense specifically. Okay. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at Boston Pizza City Place on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly after 12:30 in the afternoon, a bright, sunny, and absolutely frigid cold Saturday afternoon here in this fine city of ours. Still to come this hour, Jonas Siegel from TSN 1050 in Toronto is going to join us to talk about the Leafs. This segment of the program is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Meant to ask you, gentlemen, now that it's the 3rd of January, any New Year's resolutions?
I'm not big on New Year's resolutions, Drew.
No? Okay. No. How about you, Ezzy?
Spend less time with you guys.
Ah, good. That's a good resolution. That was actually, mine was very similar. It was actually to be meaner to you. That was my resolution.
Let's try and make them feasible here, Drew. All right.
To be that, like, I couldn't possibly be meaner to Ezzy.
No, you know what? In all seriousness, I love every second that I hang out with you guys.
Yeah,
but resolutions are never, I think, a good idea. Especially to start them on January 1st. Like, why start a resolution when you're fat and you've been drinking too much and all of that? You should start your New Year's revolution.
You should start a revolution.
As he's overthrowing the government.
Speaking of drinking too much, no, but you should probably start them like either like January 15th or like February 1st. Just, you know what I mean? It seems unrealistic when you're bloated from all that chocolate and like turkey.
No, January 1st is when you get the gym membership. February 1st is when you cancel the gym membership.
That's right. You should, but I like what you're saying, Ezzy. You should do it like on, you know, June 15th. Your resolution
middle
starts
of the year,
because you
summer.
You know, you've been working on your beach bod that entire time already. So now you have a resolution.
Yeah.
At that
well,
point.
I work on my beach bod all year round, Drew. But yeah,
to be a beached whale is what it is. That's his beach bod. But anyways, let's continue talking about the Leafs ahead of tonight's Leafs Jets game at MTS Center. I want to talk about the Jets forward group going up against the Leafs defense, because the last segment we talked about the Leafs forward group and the Leafs offense, which we know is dynamic, and, you know, top in the NHL in goals for so far this season. I believe it's 128 is the exact number that they've scored. Yes, it is 3.29 goals for per game. Then you look at their goals against, and this is where the defense comes into play. 26th in goals against with 114 goals given up. 2.97 goals against per game. So they score a ton. They also give up a ton.
Yeah.
How can the Jets sort of look to take advantage of that? Which, you know, D pairings, I mean, we know that they all have their holes on the Leafs' back end. How do you see that sort of playing out at MTS Center in the next, you know, puck drop 5.5 hours from now?
Well, if you think that Phaneuf and Franzen are going to match up against, you know, Wheeler, Ladd, and Little, then I think what you want to do, those two guys can move Phaneuf and Franzen, but I think the Jets have a speed advantage with Wheeler, Little, and Ladd there. I really do. I think you can beat those guys in transition, similar to how we talked about the first line of the Leafs being able to beat the Jets' top pairing in transition. But again, I want to go back to the second line, because to me, the Scheifele-Perreault-Frolik line is where the Jets need to make hay tonight. Doesn't mean the other lines can't create something, and the top line's got to get on the board for sure to match the other teams, the Leafs' top line. The second line is where I think the advantage is. And so the question I have then is, what's Randy Carlyle and his coaching staff going to do? Is it going to be Gardner-Holzer pairing against the Scheifele line? Or I personally think it's going to be Morgan Riley and Roman Polak. So Morgan Riley, you have a guy who's a tremendous skater. I mean, he's going to be an dominant offensive defenseman, I think, in the next few years. You know, not yet, but eventually he's going to get to that point. Roman Polak is a solid stay-at-home guy. But again, you can get those two guys moving around a bit, and Polak is not a great skater. He's a little bit slow, a little bit methodical in what he does. So the Perreault-Scheifele and Frölich line isn't the fastest line in the league either. Scheifele really needs to be able to move his feet. But if you can create a little bit of movement, and I think this line has been a little bit better lately off the cycle, creating chances, and Perreault kind of on the half boards in the corner, moving around a bit, playing smart short passes. I think that line, if matched up against Riley and matched up against Polak, can cause some havoc if they have enough offensive movement. And movement in the offensive zone, meaning shifting around, changing places, making sure Riley, as a young defenseman, is communicating with Polak. Polak moving his feet a lot, getting him stopping and going and stopping and going. I think they can make some hay there.
Yeah, Richie, and you mentioned that second line being a real key to this game, and Morgan Riley and Roman Polak possibly being who Randy Carlyle puts out against the Scheifele, Frölich, Perreault line. And that's even more reason why the Jets need to get going here 5-on-5. The Jets haven't scored a 5-on-5 goal here, guys, in the last two games. And to me, you have the Maple Leafs coming in late. As our boy Soch told us, the Leafs got in here, I think it was 12:45. It's a good thing we have Soch, monitoring the flights. I feel like he's Kramer monitoring those flights coming in.
when they're betting on it with at the terminal, you're right. Hey, I want to interrupt there for a second. I mean, look, these guys aren't going to bed before 12:45, I think, most any night anyways.
It's an hour flight.
Yeah, it's not that big of a deal from St. Paul. I'm more concerned about the taxing effects of playing two straight games in two nights than I am about the time in which they arrive in Winnipeg.
Right. And that was more of the point. I mean, they're playing last night against Minnesota. Minnesota beats the beats the Leafs. And the Leafs, this is the last game of a really tough seven-game road trip, mm-hmm. Richie. They're 2-4 so far on this road trip. The Leafs are quickly falling out of a strong playoff position. I think at one point they were in fourth, and now you have other teams, Rangers and the Bruins, that are starting to come along strong. But this is a game for me that you got to win 5-on-5. And, it's nice that the Jets' power play has gotten going now. It's gone from 28th or 29th in the league now to 20th or 21st or whatever it is. And, they've gone on a nice run here since they went on that terrible scoreless drought on the power play. But, I agree with Richie in the sense that the speed of that line can cause Morgan Riley, Roman Polak, or if it's Kerbinian, Holzer, and Jake Gardner, I'm sure,
Same idea in terms of matchups, though, right? Skating offensive guy in Gardner, guy in Holzer.
What they did, Richie, was they brought in these guys that are kind of tougher guys, and that's why Holzer's been in the lineup and Robidoux's been a healthy scratch now. I think it's for 4 or 5 games. And, unfortunately, he's towards the end of his career, and he hasn't quite been as effective as the Leafs wanted him to be.
Didn't stop him from signing him to a 3-year contract
in
the summer.
Well, I think he changes the metal and character of that team, and you might not like the contract, and he's wearing down. I think it'll still take him a while to round into form. I know we're almost halfway through the year here. But he is a tough guy. He gets a different change in the environment there. It's not always on the ice. I mean, it's the effect in the dressing room, his mentality. His
underrated player for the Stars, Richie.
For sure.
And the Ducks, even.
And a tough player, as he. And, one thing we haven't talked about it all yet. The Winnipeg Jets are 8-8-3 at home. There's only four teams in the National Hockey League that are below 500 at home. I know the Jets are 500 at home, as you can tell.
My definition,
yes,
they're not.
Yeah, your definition, whatever. Yeah. The idea is you're 8-8-3 at home. You have two games coming up here, one against the Leafs, which you're basically similar. You have the same amount of points. You're the same team, basically, in terms of production. You have point. However you get there, the idea is you both have 45 points, right? And then you play the San Jose Sharks, who also have 45 points, okay? So you're playing two teams that have the identical amount of points as you do as of today.
Fighting for their playoff lives.
San Jose is absolutely competing with the Jets for a playoff spot. What I'm saying here is you have to win at home. 8-8-3, guys, you can't make the playoffs 8-8-3 at home. You can't. Especially with the crowd that you have here, the last change, the advantages you have to protect your defensemen who aren't great. No, there's a lot of lack of depth there right now. You have to win at home.
Right, Richie, and you can't sustain the road record that they've had. I mean, they've been incredible on the road, winning twice in Chicago, for example.
Yeah.
You're right. This is an important game. not only because you've lost the previous two games, but you haven't played as well at home as you would have liked. And they were playing it well, very well at home, starting in mid to late November and going into December. Now they've really started to struggle here at home, and that goes back to the Philadelphia loss before Christmas even. So I agree, it's important here. This is a big game for the Jets. It's not a must-win or it's not a do-or-die. The Jets still have a lot of the season here, and they've been playing well. They've given themselves a bit of a cushion that it's not like there's six teams that are ahead of them for that eighth spot, and they're chasing it. So they need to, though.
But that gap has closed. I mean, yes, they've done tremendously well throughout the end of 2014. But, you know, whereas at the beginning of December, you know, we were pretty close to writing off Dallas and Colorado, and it's still a long shot. So I'm not saying that the sky is falling, but those teams have definitely, you know, talked their way or played their way back into the conversation. You know, Dallas 8-2 in their last 10. Colorado 6-2-2 in their last 10. The Jets are 5-3-2, which is, you know, really given their injuries, not terrible stretch of the imagination.
I have Paul Maurice in the top one of the top candidates for the Jack Adams. You know, I took a look around the league. In preparation for the show, you probably have to give it to Peter Laviolette right now, the job that he's done in Nashville, transforming that team from a defensive to offensive team and keeping it going right now. Nashville is 24-9-3.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty incredible. They're ahead of the Blackhawks by 4 points only, or sorry, by the Blues by 4 points, only 1 point behind the Blackhawks with two games in hand. But
It's all Olli Jokinen, Rich.
But yeah, exactly. But Paul Maurice, guys, is in the conversation, and what he's done here to instill. Like, I have been very pleasantly surprised with the way the Jets have been able to stay in the race considering their injuries, and even without their injuries, the way they were playing before that. But yeah. I think Maurice needs a little help now.
Well,
I do think that. I said that in the first segment. I think he needs a little bit of help up front, a player who can play right now. And I think he needs his defense to kind of step up here. I know they've tried to step up, but step up a little more, play a little more confidently, even if maybe they don't always believe in themselves.
Fake confidence. Find a way to sort of get a swagger when, you know, remember the Swaggerville Bombers from a couple years ago? When, you know, I think it was 2 years ago when they were just unbelievably arrogant for no reason. The Jets have a bit of a reason to be arrogant.
It wasn't no reason. They had a pretty good defense, Swaggerville.
No, I'm talking not the one from 3 years ago where they were actually a good team, but a couple years ago when they were really bad and they had no reason to be, you know, wolfing on the field. I agree. The Jets, you know, Paul Postma, Adam Party, those guys need to just sort of, I don't know where you find fake confidence. And it's a bizarre concept to wrap your head around, and I don't know how you do it, but they sort of need to do that and not grip their sticks so tightly. And I mean, you know, when in that Isles game, when Paul Postma got turned around inside out and just sort of swan dove, and I mean,
well,
you,
I mean, Party got beat wide,
that's
and then
right.
Postma tried to cover up for him and fell. And yeah, and is it just a mistake in skating? Sure, but I think it goes back to confidence. I really do. And I think Paul Maurice wants Paul Postma to play with more confidence. Paul Postma, out of all four of those guys, certainly has the most talent. And by four of those guys, I'm talking Klitsam, Party, Harrison, and Postma.
Sure.
He's got the most talent. And this is, I mean, he knows this is his opportunity. I mean, I know that. I mean, you can tell, and you look at him, and you see him in practice. He knows this is his opportunity here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of balancing the opportunity, you know, and putting too much pressure on yourself from playing freely and saying, hey, I know I'm going to be playing for the next month or so. I got to. And Paul Maurice pulled him aside at the end of practice a couple days ago to talk to him. Like, he knows this is important. He needs Paul Postma, guys. Like, the team needs a guy like that to step up. And the transition game is so important, too. We talk about playing in the neutral zone and all different things like that. What about getting the puck out of your own zone? I mean, the first goal that, as he mentioned the other night, that was a product of not getting the puck out of your own zone. So, I mean, it's all factors. And it's so tough to play defense in the National Hockey League. But if a guy can step up or two guys can step up and play a little bit above their heads, they can be okay.
You know, just quickly, I mean, you know, we don't want to be too hard on these guys. They've had a couple of bad games. You know, when they went into Chicago and beat Chicago 5-1, you know, we weren't talking about that. When they went into, the game was here, they beat the Bruins 2-1. I mean, these guys have shown that they can play some smart hockey. They've had a couple of bad games. They got a rebound with a good performance.
Well, that game in Chicago where I was on a plane and then I landed and I turned on my phone to see the score, I thought I was hallucinating. That was the most stunning result, I think.
They played really well. Yeah. And again, I mean, they've been playing, again, we've talked about the fact that these injuries are catching up to them a bit. So it's a matter of nipping in the bud now and being like,
right,
okay, a couple of these games went awry. We can't lose confidence. You know, they talked about not getting overconfident. I don't think this team has ever been overconfident, even though they had success with injuries. So the same in the same vein, you cannot be can't lose your confidence that quickly because you've had a couple bad games.
And to their credits, every time they've really had to face adversity this year, you know, they've never had a losing streak where they haven't earned a point at least, besides the right at the beginning of the year. They have. How long has it been since
they've
lost?
One three-game losing streak.
And
or
that
maybe
was at the
two.
One, I think. That was at the beginning of the year. And then when they lost to Detroit and St. Louis back-to-back, they came back with wins.
And you're playing. They played better in those games against two really good teams than they have in the past two games.
That's true. You're playing a Leafs team that is also injured.
Yeah.
And is the Leafs, I mean, if we've seen anything of them this year, they're tremendously streaky. They lose eight games in a row, and they lose them all 45-0, and the fans riot. Then they win 10 games in a row, and they're world, you know, the world beaters, and they're the Stanley Cup champions. And right now they're back on another one of their losing streaks, I think they're 2-5 in their last seven.
To that point, and then we have to go to break, the last two games the Jets have not dictated the style of play. And I think that's a product of the speed of Minnesota and a product of the speed of the Islanders, and the Leafs have some speed as well. But I think Palmeiras is going to say, hey, let's get back to the style of play. Keep the puck on the outside. Make the simple play. And then, as he mentioned this earlier, enough with the stupid penalties. If you're not talented enough, which the Jets aren't, and you certainly aren't deep enough right now because of the injuries, you cannot shoot yourself in the foot by taking penalties. Never mind stupid penalties.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look more at the Jets lines. We'll talk about, is it time to maybe move an asset to try and get somebody to fill in and shore up some of those Jets forwards lines. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. Going to continue talking about the Jets, their forward line, and their lack of depth, especially without Evander Kane in the lineup. He blocked a shot, a Jay Harrison shot, friendly fire. Second time this year for Evander Kane going down at the hands of friendly fire, and he'll be out of the Jets lineup until sometime in February. We were talking about it earlier, and talking about maybe it's time for Winnipeg Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff to use an asset. And I don't think, I'll speak for myself here. I don't think we're saying to use a first-round pick. But is it maybe time to package up a second rounder or a couple thirds or whatever it is? Sort of not the seventh-round picks, but maybe a second and a third or a third and a fourth to go out and get somebody who can try and fill one of those top nine roles to, the team has performed, and they probably are looking to you now to help them with a bit of a boost.
I don't think you even need to give up that much, Drew. I mean, you look again, waivers have subjected some guys. Some guys have been subjected to waivers that have some offensive talent. I mentioned Derek Roy before. I mean, whoever it may be that you're going to get, there are some players on some teams that, you know, they've seen better days. But if they have a one-year contract, you might be able to get them for nothing because it's the money issue. Right? I mean, look, the Jets got Carolina eat some of Jay Harrison's contract. So you look at it that perspective. I don't think they need to give up too much here to get. Unless you're getting a guy for more than a year, giving up a second or third, I'd say absolutely no. I don't see a reason for that. Now fourth and fifth, you're talking about very little opportunity those guys make it. But you don't want to trade all of them. I don't really have an issue with trading one, depending on the quality of player. But there are guys available. I think on teams like, Edmonton Oilers team. Now a guy like David Perron's a different story. You're giving up a first round pick, and we'll talk about that trade later from the Pittsburgh and Edmonton perspectives. But there are teams, if you look at the standings, right, guys? I mean,
well, it's time to sort of pick the scraps of the teams that are completely out of it.
Arizona lose David Schlemko on waivers, tried to pass him through for the second time today, and Dallas claimed him. But Arizona and Edmonton are way out of it, right? Sure. Buffalo, Carolina are way out of it. I mean, Jersey might have a hope, even though Jersey's only 2 points ahead of Buffalo. Maybe Jersey, with their changes, has a hope of doing something here. But at the end of the day, there are teams that are out of it that have some players that you could probably throw in. It would be an upgrade over what they have right now, the Jets have right now.
And in the meantime, I mean, we could sit here and talk about this. I guess that's what we're doing right now. And we could talk about, should Chevy make a trade right now in the absence of Evander Kane, who's out until February. And I wouldn't disagree with that. And that puts the onus on the Jets' third line right now. TJ Gagliardi, who's a healthy scratch for six games, which I actually thought he should be in the lineup. He's back on the third line there with Adam Lowry and Matt Halischek. They're going to have to contribute. Especially if Mark Scheifele's line is not contributing and Andrew Ladd's line is not contributing, Richie. Those guys can't score every single night. Okay.
Go ahead.
They have for the most part. And, you know, you talk about some of the trades that have happened around the NHL, Rich. You know, you mentioned David Perron for a first rounder. I would be surprised if we saw a move like that.
For sure.
But yeah, you talk about a guy like Derek Roy, a veteran who might have lost a step, but he could really help out that third line. I think especially you're going to maybe see pressure on Kevin Cheveldayoff as the season progresses and as we get into January, especially when you're going to be going into L.A., you're going to be going into Anaheim.
That's coming up next week.
So there might be increased pressure, especially if the Jets aren't able to get at least maybe 3 points out of the next two games against the Sharks and the Leafs. So I think it's pretty obvious here that the Jets, especially with Evander Kane out of the lineup, and Evander Kane wasn't scoring at the level that we expected him to, and that's why he was probably on the third line. But, you know, I thought Kane, Lowry, and Halaschuk, that line was working pretty good, especially on the road. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, Kane goes down, and you know, Chris Thorburn wasn't able to maybe have a full game like he wanted to. He got the one good scoring chance in the first period. But, you know, these guys, for now, they've been entrusted by Paul Maurice to get the job done. And, you know, I think, yes, for the first time, guys, maybe we will see the Winnipeg Jets as a buyer as we go towards the trade deadline. But I don't think anything's happening here, at least for the next week or two. But, you know, based on Kevin Cheveldayoff's trading tendencies, but you know, I wouldn't expect something big to come.
I think you need to be the buyer now, though, because if everybody gets healthy and you don't suffer any more injuries, being the buyer in March, right around the trade deadline, is almost, you know, too late. You have the need now, and you know,
right. But you're saying that, but who's the guy that's the one that pulls the trigger, right?
Well, of course. But I mean, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm the general manager here. But this
I'm
is
not
the
saying
time.
You are. I'm just saying we could sit here and talk about of this course. For 2 hours. Is it going to happen though?
But it should. I mean, right now you have cap space. You're in a playoff spot. Mm-hmm. Be aggressive. You know, call up, you know, Carolina again, who you just did business with. So you obviously have some sort of rapport. And Carolina, which is, you know, struggling attendance-wise, and, you know, it's not a lot of money by any stretch, but, you know, you look at a guy like Jiří Tlusty, who's an unrestricted free agent at the end of this year, and he's making $2.9 million, and there's $1.5 million left on that contract for this season. Maybe they need to get out from under that contract because the attendance numbers are struggling and the team's not going anywhere. Why not make that phone call today? Why wait until, you know, the middle of February to make that phone call when your team is hopefully getting more and more healthy?
I see what you're saying there, Drew. Now, for that example, like a guy like Jiří Tlusty to me is going to cost you a second rounder. Yep. Right? He can create off the rush. He's a good player. He's a good stick handler. Not the biggest guy. Good skill level. So when I'm looking at it, I'm saying, okay, what do they have? What's out there? A lot of the problem is some of the players available that may help this team are with competitors. Maybe you think Eric Cole can help this squad. I mean, Eric Cole's not what he once was, but the idea of that kind of a player, Dallas isn't going to help you.
Right.
Now there's Minnesota. So, I mean, Colorado. I mean, maybe you say, oh, I'll just take a chance on Danny Breer. What the hell? He's only got a couple months left on his deal. But does another team want to help you? So
no, but Carolina's not. Doesn't care if they help you or not. They're not going anywhere.
Right. That's right. I agree with that, Drew. I think, I mean, if I'm... I have to make sure that this player is healthy, but the kind of player I think that would fit what the Jets want to do, and you guys can stop me here if this player is not healthy, is a guy like Matt Cullen. And the reason I say that is he's hitting a 3.5 clip for a contract. You can play the point on the power play. Perreault's really worked well in terms of an experiment on the first, not an experiment anymore, is the first unit being a four-man forward unit and one-man defense unit, Ezzy. A guy like Cullen can play center and wing. He can play, and as I mentioned, on the power play. He's a veteran. The if I recall correctly, has played in the past for Paul Maurice in Carolina. Seasoned veteran, a guy they know what to expect, more along the lines of what the Jets seem to like as opposed to taking a risk on a guy. So I don't know, again, health issues there. But money, maybe Nashville wants to save some. As you mentioned, the Jets have some cap room. That's the kind of guy I think might be someone that could help down the road here. That's the kind of guy I'm thinking of. He won't cost you much because that's a lot of money that he's making. He's not going to give you dollar. Not going to give you value for the dollar. He's not going to. But you don't really care right now. To your point, Drew, you need to deal with it now as opposed to later. So that's the kind of guy I'd be looking at. If he's healthy, again, I don't know. I'll double check there. But
Well, it's the ball is in Kevin Cheveldayoff's court with that in regards to adding players to this team, and we'll see over the next weeks what he decides to do, if anything. Let's head to break. When we come back, Jonas Siegel from TSN 1050 is going to join us to set up more of tonight's Leafs-Jets game. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. You're listening to TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Quick point of clarification. We were talking about him before the break. Matt Cullen is currently on IR for the Nashville Predators with an upper body injury. While you're at it, follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from our TSN affiliate in Toronto. He covers the Leafs, Jonas Siegel. Jonas, good afternoon and Happy New Year, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, same to you guys. Thanks for having me on again.
Jonas, we got to first of all start by asking, you know, the Leafs very banged up right now. No Lupo, no Kadri, no Holland. JVR breaks his nose last night. How are you feeling?
I feel good. You know, health-wise, I'm good. I don't have the mumps. I don't have the flu. I'm not on the IR for now.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. Glad to hear that. But back to those injuries. I mean, obviously, you know, sort of a, you know, no sympathy coming out of the Winnipeg Jets camp, obviously, with the injuries that they've suffered here in Winnipeg. But how are the Leafs going to be able to handle losing those, you know, four key members? JVR obviously returned back to the game last night after breaking his nose. But how are the Leafs going to handle being without Kadri, Lupo, and Holland for the next little while?
Well, they're going to be tested because, you know, obviously you take away two of a team's top three centers and all of a sudden, you know, you're facing an issue in terms of your depth. But the one thing that they did in the offseason, at least it was a priority, was they wanted to improve their depth. They went out and signed Winnick, Zanarelli, and Komarov. They claimed Ponick off of waivers. They went about trying to become a deeper team, and so that in the case potentially of injuries, they would be able to sustain themselves and keep themselves going. And it's funny, like I talked to Lupo maybe a month ago, and one of the things he said with that depth is once you get injuries, that's when it really kind of comes to the forefront. But they're still going to be tested at center. You know, anytime you take away two of your top three guys down the middle and you're plugging a Daniel Winnick in there, he's a natural center, but he's mostly spent the year on the wing. You've got Trevor Smith. You don't really have a lot of guys who can create a lot offensively. So that's going to be a real issue for them, you know, in the next couple weeks when they're playing without Kadri, without Holland. And obviously Lupo's a different case.
Jonas, we were talking about this earlier in the show, and this is something that really hasn't changed since last year. The Leafs, of course, are the top offensive team in the NHL, but they struggle defensively. And obviously Jonathan Bernier, having that injury coming back, he's been pretty good. But this group of defensemen has struggled to keep the puck out of their own net. Is there any reason to expect the Leafs are going to change their style, or are they going to try to just continue to be a rush team, continue to rely on that top line of Bozak, Kessel, and Van Riemsdyk, and try to win high-scoring games?
Well, they're trying to change it. I'm just not convinced that they can. You know, whether that's because the players can't do it, whether that's because the players won't buy into doing it, whether that's whatever it is, whether it's coaching, personnel, they're trying. They're trying to become, you know, a team that doesn't rely so much on its goaltenders, doesn't rely so much on its offense to win games. But maybe they're just not built that way. Maybe they're just not good enough. You know, and these are the questions that are bigger than just what's going on with the team right now. Is, you know, bigger picture for Brendan Shanahan. Is there something wrong with the core of the team, with Kessel, with Finup, with Bozak, with Clarkson, with all these guys who are put together? Or is it something wrong with the coaching staff? Does Randy Carlyle need to be replaced? Is it a combination of the two? Like, those are bigger picture issues just because it's not like this has been going on for a couple weeks or a couple months. These are the same issues that have been happening for this team for years now. And at some point, you know, they've got to be fixed because long term, you can't really win that way.
Jonas, you think if the Leafs make the playoffs, Randy Carlyle's job is safe?
That's a great question. I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure that even a playoff berth will change things. He very well might. You know, I mean, you go back to last summer, it surprised everyone not only that they just kept the head coach and fired some of the assistants, but that Carlisle was given, you know, an extension. So if he makes the playoffs, does that demonstrate growth? I think that's going to be the key question. Can he demonstrate growth in the group? Because if the same things continue to happen, let's say they keep scoring tons of goals, they keep winning games 5-4, 5-3, mm-hmm. I'm not sure that they're going to be convinced that this is the right coach to lead the group, because, you know, these are not this is not the type of hockey that you need to play to have long-term success. So I'm not sure a playoff berth clinches it, but if it's a playoff berth in the right way, the way that they want to play, then maybe that changes the equation.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Jonas Siegel from TSN 1050 Radio in Toronto. He covers the Leafs. Jonas, Leo Komarov returned to the lineup, I believe, in Boston on New Year's Eve. You know, why has he been so important to the Leafs this season?
Because he brings, you know, a personality of feistiness to his game, and I think that's kind of infectious. He's very, very, very physical. He's, you know, people talk about work ethic, but you see it with Komarov every single shift. He's going all out. He ticks the other team off, and he just gives them an attitude that they didn't have before. You know, and you take away last year, they came out of last season thinking that they needed to get Komarov back, simply because they didn't feel that they had that attitude. They wanted that attitude back. He brings them a dimension that they don't have otherwise, and you could see it even when he was missing, you know, for the 14 games. They just lack that punch, and he kind of gives them that punch. And the one thing about Komarov this year is he's provided them some offense. You know, he's already set career highs in, I think, every offensive category. That wasn't really expected, but it's kind of been a bonus on top of everything else that he does.
Jonas, Cody Franzen, a player I've always liked, and at times he's struggled a little bit on defense, but his offensive game has really never struggled, and he got another goal last night. He's, of course, a free agent coming up. Do you think the Leafs are going to want to sign him, or is there any progress there?
I'm not sure. You know, I'm still not sure if they're going to be interested, depending on how much money he's looking for, because he's going to be able to cash in. He's going to be able to get a 4 or 5 year deal. Whether it's $4 million, whether it's $5 million, he's putting up offensive numbers. He's playing on their top pair. His possession stats comparatively with the rest of the group are pretty strong. So there's a lot of factors that go into why he's been good, and he's really helped Dion Phaneuf on their top pair. Do they want to commit long-term? In the past, they haven't. You know, they've gone through the past three times they've negotiated contracts with friends, and there have been contentious negotiations. They've never agreed. He signed three straight one-year deals. So you wonder, with new management, with a different outlook, I think, at the top, do they look at Cody Franzen differently and say, okay, this is a guy that we need to keep. This is a guy that you can't afford to let go. Because if they take him off this team, again, where do you replace him? But the other side of that argument is you don't want to overpay a defenseman that you don't really think fits your long-term picture. So I'm not sure. I think that's still being determined. But, you know, just before January 1st, I reported that there weren't any contract talks, so we'll see if that changes.
You know, Jonas, on that point, I want to, you know, keep going on that, because it's very interesting. You talk about Cody Franzen and, you know, what he brings to the table and if they want to resign him, but it seems like that's kind of been like the way the Leafs are, right? I mean, Phaneuf, well, what he brings us, we don't necessarily love, but we're so worried about what we'll have to replace him. If it'll be nothing because he's a UFA, well, we have to sign him to a contract, or at least, you know, that might seem to be the reasoning from afar. You know, Phil Kessel gets his $8 million per deal as far as they can take it. And these guys that they're signing, it seems like they're signing not because they love him, but because they're worried what life will be like without them, but they don't like life with them. It seems awfully confusing.
Yeah, I think it's the wrong question to ask. And I think when they initially signed those two guys, Phaneuf and Kessel, I kind of understood that sentiment. Well, where are you going to replace them? But that's not the question. The question is, are these contracts that offer you value? Are these guys that are going to help you eventually win a cup? And I think in the answer with both, it's not. You know, they're not going to eventually, at that kind of money with those kinds of contracts, those two players can't be your best players on a cup-winning team. And that's ultimately what it comes down to. So if you don't sign Phaneuf, you let them go, you let them walk, you're not gaining nothing. You're gaining cap space for one, and you're not locking yourself into a contract that is going to hinder you long term. And I think that's what they've done. They've locked up a lot of good players, but not great players, and not players ultimately that are going to help you win a cup. And I think that's the predicament they're in right now, and I think it's something that, you know, Brendan Shanahan's going to have to solve in the bigger picture.
Jonas Siegel covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for our radio affiliate in Toronto, TSN 1050. Jonas, appreciate your time this afternoon, and we'll see you tonight at the arena.
Sounds good, Mike. Thanks, boys.
Take care, Jonas. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. When we come back, we're going to shift our attention to the World Junior Hockey Championships.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Jonas Siegel, our colleague with TSN 1050 in Toronto, for joining us to discuss the Leafs. If you missed any of that or missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes. Simply subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and get it sent to your iPod automatically each and every week, every Saturday, every Wednesday, and when we really produce anything else worthwhile to send out, we'll do it via iTunes. Should mention that, and this is a mouthful, today is the Ultimate Game Day Experience 3, Grand Prize winner Brian Foy Game Day. So we want to congratulate Brian. Of course, he won the Ultimate Game Day Experience 3 back in October. He's had a great day so far today. He's been went to the pregame skate. I believe he had lunch here at Boston Pizza with maybe Paul and Brian and Shane. All good for Brian. So big congrats to Brian Foy, the winner of the Ultimate Game Day Experience 3. Today is his game day here at TSN 1290 and for tonight's Jets-Leafs game. Want to talk about the World Junior Championships, which are going to head into the semifinal stage starting tomorrow. The Team Canada, obviously, handily dispatching Team Denmark yesterday. The plucky Danes were, to nobody's surprise, no match for Team Canada. And from my perspective, and again, I haven't seen all the games because I was away for a little while, but from my perspective, this seems like it's going to be a coronation for Team Canada now that Team USA was knocked out by the Russians yesterday in the quarterfinal stages.
They, you know, Drew, there's always a concern if you're a Team Canada fan that the motivation to beat the States was the driving force behind your team, and not having the United States, you know, in your crosshairs anymore may have you take the foot off the pedal. Clearly, last night's game indicated that's not the case. They're at home. Everything's in their favor. And this team is different than the past teams. There's a skill level here that I don't think has been there in past years, and I think there's a speed that hasn't been there in past years. The U.S., I want to talk about that for a second. I mean, that was a huge loss, obviously, to a Russian team. I have to say that I was, you know, the U.S. was going to get through Russia, and they really ought to have gotten through Russia, but it's a similar problem to what the Jets have had lately. It's an undisciplined play, and in one game, you play undisciplined hockey, you take a lot of minor penalties in the first period, you put yourself out of the game. And the Russians are a one-strike kind of team. I mean, you saw in transition, they're very dangerous. And I was especially impressed, moving to Russia for a second, with how well the Russians, as he defended the lead yesterday. They had that lead. They were up, and they backed 3-2 in the last half of that third period. They backed off as soon as the States had an opportunity, stick on puck, clog the front in the middle. You know, sometimes you've seen Russian teams doze off or play kind of all over the place, a little bit more of a one-man style. That was not the case yesterday. So the U.S. team now out of it, Canada is the clear favorite. And the top line for Canada has been that dominant. So, we talk all we want about McDavid and talk all we want about Jack Eichel, but Sam Reinhart's been tremendous. Max Domi has been great. Declaire has been incredible.
Yeah, Curtis Lazar's been great.
Lazar's been good, but not as good as maybe they expected with McDavid. Still, but the guy like that brings great leadership, a calming influence, right? So long as Canada, you know, the cliche, sticks to its game plan and plays, it can even play some flawed hockey. So long as they don't make massive errors, they should be home free here.
Right, Richie, and you mentioned the Domi, Duclair, Reinhart line, and that line really has been the best line in the tournament, and, you know, Sam Reinhart specifically is leading the tournament in points, and I thought Connor McDavid probably had his best game for Canada, and he's been good. Mm-hmm. He's got 7 points, but, you know, that's what happens when Canada defeats the U.S., and gets an easier opponent. Pardon me.
That's right. That's a great point.
That's what happens. That's right. And instead of going, have to go through Russia and Sweden, you have to go through Denmark and Slovakia. So, the Americans didn't make it easy for themselves. And you can talk this really comes down to a one-game elimination. And I thought Ken Campbell of the Hockey News made a really good point. Why aren't the organizers of the World Junior Tournament looking at making this a best of three final?
100% agree. And you know I'm a big proponent of that.
And there's absolutely no reason to do that, Richie. You have a best of three to see who gets in next year and doesn't have to go to the relegation round.
That's right.
And I think that's what you're with this tournament.
The Germans and the Swiss are playing in that best of three relegation tournament right now.
You're right, Drew. Right. And I mean, this is a situation where the Americans now go home. And, you know, they're not going to medal. And I agree with you, Richie. I thought the Americans could have easily won that game against the Russians. Wow. I mean, the Americans, you know, you can talk all you want about some of the players that were left off the team. I know Adam Earn, who was a first-round pick of the Lightning, a guy that wasn't left off. But this is still a team that was full of top prospects.
Yeah.
And you know, you mentioned, you know, Jack Eichel, a guy that's expected to go... Well, probably second overall after Connor McDavid. You never know, though.
They have Austin Matthews, who's expected to go first in 2016.
Right. So, I mean, it's not like this American team was not a good team. I mean, you played the Russians, a team that was expected to be a medal favorite, who's always a medal favorite. And, yeah, you're right, Drew. I think this is setting up to be a game that the Canadians should win. You know, they beat Slovakia 8-0 earlier in the tournament.
Yeah.
This Slovakian
team,
good for the Slovakian team for being here. But this Canadian team, I think, has shown depth. And I think a point, guys, you know, you forget, everyone thinks every year the Canadians win the gold medal. They have not won the gold medal since, who was on that team? Evander Kane in 2009.
Yeah.
So it's not like this team has won this tournament every single year. This is a big tournament in Toronto. And I think probably the key difference for me, the Canadian team always has depth, Richie.
Yeah.
I think this year you're seeing probably the best goaltending with Zach Fucali and Eric Comrie that we've seen in a long time.
Skill depth, though, too. As to your point, depth, but skill depth this year, right?
Sure. It's not just guys who are filling a role, the Rob Zamners of the Olympic team.
But as you think about last year, Domi and Darnell Nurse not on this team.
And they have extra motivation as guys that were drafted in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you're right, Richie. Every year, it seems like there's somebody that doesn't make the team that you're a little bit shocked about. A guy like Michael Dahl-Cole, who was a fifth overall pick of the Islanders.
Tyler Seguin
doesn't make the team. Yeah, if you want to go back, I mean, you could list off tons of good players, right? And it's a 19-year-old tournament, and the Canadians have probably the best collection of 19-year-olds. I know there's other guys.
That's kind of
Richie, there's guys, Jonathan Drouin's not in the tournament, and there's other players that aren't in the tournament. But, you know, you look at Anthony Duclair, a guy that earlier in the season, if you guys remember, he was playing on the Rangers' second line there, at times playing with St. Louis and Nash, and you know, they decided to give him back to the World Juniors. And you know, same thing goes with Curtis Lazar.
Right.
The Ottawa Senators right now are a bubble playoff team, if that. No, they're a bubble playoff team. And you know, Brian Murray says, let's give Lazar to the junior team. Let him win a gold. He's never won a gold. And, you know, I agree with you, Richie. He hasn't been the best player. He doesn't need to be the best player. I mean, the way the Max Domi, Sam Reinhart line is playing right now, and Anthony Duclair, of course, the way that line is going, I mean, there were times in that game against Denmark, and you got to give, you know, the Danes credit here, and Nikolai Ehlers especially, but you had some other good players on that team, but at times, that first line of Canada and other lines for Canada, I mean, Denmark didn't touch the puck.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, you got
to... That's no surprise, though. Denmark's not supposed to touch the puck against these guys. I mean, that's the problem that I have with this tournament, is that it's just a little... I mean, the one-sided contest that you see, and it's great. I mean, Denmark did themselves very proud, and it's terrific to see that they're an up-and-coming hockey nation.
Well, that's what you have to do, though. You have to go through that to get to the next level.
Sure.
And I appreciate the growing pains for a hockey fan watching the games. I mean, they're not overly exciting at times because there's a big discrepancy in talent. But at the same time, to get to where you want to go, you have to endure these.
Fair point. But, I mean, I do think that you got to see the... I think Hockey Canada, you know, did make some errors in thinking how popular this tournament would be, especially in terms of attendance. You look at the Montreal attendance, where Team Canada played a significant number of games. You could go up, and they did not sell out the New Year's Eve game.
I think the ticket prices are too high.
They're way too high. They're ridiculously expensive. You couldn't buy, first of all, you couldn't buy a single game ticket until earlier in December. So there's no single game tickets. The ticket packages were $1,000 for a ticket.
That's too much.
To see Canada destroy good game.
They're out for cash. I'm of the personal opinion that the tournament should be in a non-NHL city.
I agree.
That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, so you're not going to get any disagreements from us, Rich.
I mean, come on. You give the fans of hockey at a high level that don't usually get it. And Toronto and Montreal are hot. You know, for the World Cup, they'll sell out those games, no question. I've been to the World Cup in Montreal before. They'll sell it out.
But, that ugly trophy.
Yeah, but
they're NHL. They're NHL cities.
They're NHL cities, guys. I mean, these are. I mean, Leafs lunch on TSN 1050. I mean, that's going to get more attention than anything else.
And they'll sell out. The Toronto games sold out, because Toronto's got so much sponsorship, corporate sponsorship.
And Montreal is a Hab city more than Toronto's a Leaf city in respect of, like, the National Hockey League.
Right.
Like, you know, you would have a better chance of seeing two NHL teams playing who aren't the Leafs sell out in Toronto as opposed to two NHL teams who aren't the Hab sell out in Montreal.
It's almost
a similar thing here, I think.
You can't have an event at ACC without it almost selling out just by default by the corporate
fair
sponsorship.
Enough. That's fair. Also, what you're talking about, another 3,000 tickets, too.
Sure.
Bell Center is a lot bigger.
That's right.
So that's a factor, too. But I personally think it should be in cities that don't have the National Hockey League. It gives the fans, you know, Halifax or Saskatoon.
Take it back to Red Deer.
Well, that's what's the most memorable World Junior tournament that you guys, the first time you can really remember watching the World Junior tournament?
Winnipeg. 90. Winnipeg made it a big tournament. Before that, it was not big, Drew.
Right.
The Winnipeg Arena held 15,000 or whatever it was, and it made it a big tournament. And Hockey Canada realized, hey, we can make a heck of a lot of money. So you have to understand,
but
I'm assuming the bottom line at the end of the day on this tournament without packed arenas will still be a lot higher than it would be in Saskatoon.
Be.
So that's what they're going to do. Yeah, they're out for the cash, but hey.
The most memorable tournament that I can remember, the first time I remember really noticing the World Juniors, is Red Deer.
That was 95.
Was that 95?
Yep.
Okay, well, the Red Deer in 95. And what wasn't there one in...
John Slaney goal? Is that the John Slaney goal?
I want to say that was 90.
That was was that Swift Current?
That was a little earlier.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe I'm thinking Swift Current in 90. But whatever it was, those are where the cities... where it shuts down everything else. It's the only thing that matters. And you'd love to see Hockey Canada go back to those sort of arenas. But you're right. They will never do it simply because 15,000 people at $1,000, you know, for a ticket package, or
right,
20,000,
exactly right.
Or whatever the numbers exactly are, prove that. I mean, it's their biggest. It's a cash cow.
Well,
for
I think
them.
A compromise to that is, if you don't want to have it primarily in a small town, put it in Calgary, Edmonton, and then give some of those other towns in Alberta, for example, the opportunity to see some games. Or
sure,
if it's
when
Vancouver,
it was here, it was in
give
Selkirk,
Kelowna
also.
A game, or you know, give Kamloops a game, or something like that.
Enough,
I think there's a way to. I think
spread
you want
the wealth.
I think you want to keep the. I don't know what the word is, but I think you want to keep the aura of this tournament and the ability for this tournament to be enjoyed by everyone part of it. I don't think you just want to have it in Toronto, New York, and Montreal every year.
That makes sense. You put the, you know, you can put the semifinals and the finals always in the big NHL arenas because, you know, the semifinals and finals, they'll sell out.
Right.
But put some of the preliminary round games.
I used the wrong word. What I meant was the heart of this tournament.
Because
the heart of this tournament is, like you said, everybody remembers the game in Red Deer and, pardon me, the tournament in Red Deer, the tournament in Grand Forks.
Sure. But
the tournament in Winnipeg.
But the tournament in Grand Forks was only a success because we all drove down there.
Right.
It was just a success.
Buffalo, same thing.
Buffalo, Toronto,
exactly.
That's why they're always at these border towns that might as well be Canadian during the length of the tournament. Quickly about the Winnipeg Jets prospects playing in the tournament. The Jets have the most prospects of any NHL team that are playing in this tournament, six Jets prospects playing for the various countries.
I don't think my perspective on any player has changed based on the tournament. I think that you have a high ceiling on a lot of these guys. I think my concerns with some of them are the same. Like Nick Petan, incredibly talented player, great work ethic and all those things. Can he succeed at the NHL level on a non-special teams basis?
Because of his
size. In a scoring role, yeah. And what is it, a wing? Is it center? Where is he going to be? Nikolaj Ehlers, to me, I've said it on the show before, reminds me of Patrick Kane, dynamic player. I mean, Patrick Kane's a obviously very dynamic player, but Ehlers has a lot of talent. Josh Morrissey is going to be your puck-moving back-ender.
He's been laying out some big hits, too.
Yeah, and he won't.
He creamed somebody
afraid to be physically. Certainly squared up more since we... met him at the draft a couple of years back, and then you look at a guy like Eric Comrie. I mean, can you really gauge Eric Comrie based on two games against kind of low competition? I don't really. It's very difficult for me to say. Has he been impressive? Sure, but I mean, who's he playing against? And then you know, Chase DeLeo, got occasion to watch him yesterday. Haven't watched him a ton. The other guys haven't seen a ton. But at the end of the day, the top end guys, they are what they are. There's nothing crazy here in this tournament that blew my mind. Nothing here to put up any red flags either.
But it's certainly a good sign that you have the most number of players playing
in the junior
tournament.
Yeah.
And that speaks to the Jets drafting that we've said all along. It seems to have been pretty well done so far since their return into Winnipeg.
And it also speaks, I mean, Morrissey, first-round pick. Petan, second-round pick. Comrie, second-round pick. Ehlers, first-round pick. So we're talking
fourth round picks there, too.
Yeah, talking fourth round picks. We're talking about trading a six for Harrison, whatever it may be. I mean, these guys, it's hard for them to crack these rosters.
That's right. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Sunaya Sapurji from Yahoo Sports. She's their junior hockey writer. We'll talk more about the World Junior Hockey Championships. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.